back to the 9-8 podcast for another week. My name is David Ellis.
And my name is Alex Hogg. Welcome to you all. How are you today, Dave?
I'm well. I am really well. Got off the back of, you know, listening to some really good music today, and home to speak with my colleague on the West Coast and talk all things prog and music in general, with a focus, of course, on prog. So how could I not be any better? How are you?
I'm good. It's been a busy day for me, but all the more better when I can sit down and talk music and talk prog with my mate Dave.
Oh, isn't that good? That's all the feelers coming out there. Mm-hmm. The feelers? The feels. The feels, yeah, feels. Not the feelers.
No, feelers. That's a whole other thing.
That's like some Men in Black shit right there. Mm-hmm. So what have we got on the agenda to talk about today? What were we talking about? Well, I mean, follow up from last week. Have we got anything we want to follow up on?
Particularly, no, nothing that I can think of. I think we're recording this sort of in advance before it goes live, so I suspect one of these days we're going to have just all of the feedback and just an entire episode dedicated to having feedback with our listeners.
Mm, I'm looking forward to that. I think that's going to be good. That's actually going to be fun. One of the things I couldn't help but think about since last week was the fact that we kind of come across as grumpy old men sometimes. You know, me saying things like, you know, now kids, back in my day we had forums, and, you know, talking about how metal pits used to be and how the music industry used to be, you know, very big theme through things last week. But one of the things I did want to touch on this week is volume. And I don't mean volume as in the amount of things that are sold. I mean actually loud volume, the actual loudness of concerts these days. Do you find them to be sort of obnoxiously loud, or am I just being a cranky old man?
No, I don't think you're being a cranky old man. I find them to be oppressively loud, especially the small clubs. Less so in arenas, I find, but especially the small clubs, it seems to me that everybody thinks they're Motorhead and can play at a million decibels. It's just so frustrating.
Oh, you know, I do music photography on the side from this and, you know, all the other things I do on the side that somehow make up a whole. and I always go with a set of earplugs.
Oh, absolutely.
Always. I'm always there with earplugs. I was actually I went to Limp Bizkit recently, and I had a friend of mine with me, and she said to me, you know, she's not a very well-seasoned concert goer. And I said, do you want earplugs? And she went, no, I'll be fine. I said, yeah, no, you're putting these in, you know. So I gave her some of the little foam ones, you know. Anyway, the concert finished up and we walked out, and she pulled out the earplugs. She went, wow, I can hear. And it's like, yes, that's the point of the earplugs. Meanwhile, there's a guy and he's got his finger in his ear trying to regain some stuff, make the hairs stand up again. And it's like, mate, yep, come on, you know. But I find they get very, very loud, you know, obnoxiously so. And they turn it up halfway through, or is that just me?
Oh, I reckon they do. I mean, I have my own set of agendas for wearing earplugs at gigs. I have tinnitus, and particularly badly, it's hereditary. It's not general. I mean, even though I have been to a lot of live concerts, for me, it's hereditary. And if I don't wear earplugs, I'm not going to hear anything for about 2 days. If anybody out there is looking for earplugs and ones that particularly, I mean, the foam ones that you mentioned, those are pretty good. But if you are a more seasoned live concert goer, the ones that I would recommend, the ones that I personally use, this is not a sponsorship read, by the way, guys, this is just my own personal preferences here, is a set of earplugs called Flare Audio. You use the same ones, do you?
I don't, but I know they're good. I know they're extremely good.
Yeah, so those are the ones I use. And I recently just bought my fiance a pair. She doesn't wear earplugs at concerts, which I always find to be absolutely infuriating. So I recently bought her a pair, and she went to go and see another band, which we will have to do an episode on, sort of a lot of music from, you know, less known countries, not so much American and English focused and Australian focused. Mm. A local post metal band called Small Man. Bulgarian, they're very, very good. I've never actually managed to see them live because the jammy buggers keep playing several days after I fly home. That was the first time she'd seen them with earplugs in. She's like, my God, I can hear things. I can hear the vocals and hear, you know, piano lines and stuff.
Nah, really?
Mm.
I know Flare Audio, their ones are actually made of aluminum, aren't they?
Yes, they're the one with the aluminium.
And titanium.
Yes, those are the ones. Mm. Yep.
Yeah, they're really cool. Really, really cool. They are expensive though. I mean, $45 a set.
Yep.
I use the Heroes brand, and they're quite good. You pick them up now for about $16 for a set, and they're actually, I've been using the same pair for about 6 years now, and they're brilliant. Never had a problem.
Nice.
But I do know that these ones, these Flare Isolates are, yeah, they're amazing.
They are very, very good. I do know, maybe this is just an Australian thing, the live concerts. I mean, you and I have both been to concerts in mostly in Europe and also for me in America. I don't find this to be such much of a problem in those countries. Maybe this is just an Australian thing.
I agree with you. I think it is an Australian thing. I remember seeing Carnival in London. I saw Limp Bizkit in Berlin as well, and they weren't as loud as what both of those bands are here.
Yep, I agree. I mean, my comparison for that was I saw Sleep Makes Waves in London. Mm-hmm. And I've seen Sleep Makes Waves a whole bunch of times in various parts of Australia, and they were not that loud in London. Mm. Maybe there are certain rules in built-up cities like that about how loud you can be.
Wouldn't surprise me if we were a bit behind the times with that.
What gave you what could possibly give you that idea?
I don't know. Hey, that's a rabbit hole I'm staying well away from. That's an entire other podcast, not another episode, man.
There's an idea. How Australia is behind the times, and then just pick apart a single topic on every single one.
Yeah, exactly. And just, I mean, you'd have content for days, weeks, years. Could this, do you think, have something to do with the loudness wars?
Could do. I mean, the loudness wars, for those of people who are not entirely familiar with what we're talking about, this is the general trend that records over the years have been getting louder and louder and with less and less, what's the word I'm looking for? Dynamic range? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
Yep. So less and less dynamic range. We've spoken about this in a previous episode where I relayed the story of Chinese Democracy and how the producer put three versions of the album to Axl Rose, and to his great shock and surprise, he picked the one with the largest dynamic range and the least compression. A popular punching bag on the internet for loudness and the loudness of records seems to be Rick Rubin. The Metallica records and a particularly terrible, I think. He did Californication, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, that's almost unlistenable.
Yeah, it was. He was the producer
on that. Yeah, I know he was the producer for quite a while on that. Yeah. So he gets a lot of beating from music fans around the world for producing records that seem to be obnoxiously loud.
Most things that are recorded at the mansion seem to have that weird compression on it, especially if it's done by Rubin. I mean, if you look at Slipknot Volume 3, The Subliminal Verses, Minutes to Midnight, Linkin Park, which was the Mars Volta was recorded there as well. Dearest,
I know the one you're talking about.
Stadium Arcadium was recorded there. Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Audio Slave did one there as well, which I think was Out of Exile. There's a whole bunch of different people that did stuff there. I think even Jay-Z did 99 Problems there, from memory. And I think Lorde has recorded there. She did one of the secret sessions there for iHeartRadio. But they all have that compressed to they're just completely compressed to the shit house.
There you go.
You know, it just. Ugh. Yeah.
I know where this all started. This started back in like the 50s with jukeboxes, where the jukebox in the club was set to a certain level, and then various producers would master the vinyls at louder and louder levels, so there one would appear in the club louder.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's where it started.
Right.
That's where, and then it's just kept going and going and going because there's this long-standing trend and theory that louder records do better. And there's probably some truth in that, at least in the olden days, starting and going probably through to the 90s or something, when you had radio, you know, where the radio in a shop or in a record store or whatever was set to a certain volume and the louder song would appear and people would notice it more. Nowadays, where you've got more people listening to music in their own devices, it seems obnoxious and rather mean to continue to have things so loud. There is a bit of a reaction back against it, where albums are beginning to be, you know, mastered at these lower levels and have more range.
I agree with you. I think people are starting to swing away from it. The problem is they don't have the substance to fill the spaces up now. So it seems that whilst the dynamic range is increasing nowadays, the dynamicism within the actual music, because they use two synthesizers and a drum machine, seems to be gone.
What you mean. Yep. Yeah.
You know? So it's really weird, this dynamic that we find ourselves in at the moment.
It's quite a strange one. Just a fun little topic to discuss and get some people's feedback on.
Yeah, we'd love to hear what you think. Do you think albums are getting softer? Are they getting louder? And do you think concerts are too loud wherever you are? Drop us an email. Choose a tweet.
Particularly interested to know from people around the world.
Yeah, because I think it is most definitely an Australian problem. It seems to be an Australian problem.
It wouldn't surprise me if it was an American problem. I mean, we do seem to follow everything else the American does.
Yeah, true. I think again, the America just then was used correctly as well. But
we'll save that one for that other podcast.
Yeah. But I think we touched there on Axl Rose as well, in the Loudness Wars, being almost a poster boy for not doing the whole Loudness Wars thing, which when you think of Axl Rose being the person that he is, you kind of don't really anticipate that to happen. Recently, he's been in the news for censorship. Again, something that you wouldn't necessarily think the frontman of probably one of the biggest cock rock bands around that's ever been, or heavy rock or hard rock or whatever it is you want to call it, because he's actually decided to remove a song called One in a Million from the re-release of Appetite for Destruction, mostly because of the content of the song. What do you think about this? Do you think it's necessarily a good thing to go and censor things that have happened in the past, or?
This could be a big, huge topic that we could really, really get stuck into and probably should someday. I generally have a pretty dim view of this sort of going back and trying to whitewash their way out of things. Okay, yes, what he says in this particular song about black people and homosexuals, and particularly the language he uses, using certain words to describe them, obviously that's not a good thing. And things that you can necessarily say in 1987, you definitely shouldn't say it today. But that doesn't mean you should go back and take it away and remove it and pretend that it didn't happen. You could use that, and people probably should be using that as a jumping off point to say, well, this is why we don't say this anymore.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think one of the greatest travesties that's ever happened to history is the absolute destruction of a lot of the Nazi stuff in Germany after the Second World War. Not because, you know, I want to goose step down the hallway or anything like that, but because they destroyed so much history with it. And it is a little bit of a different circumstance. I mean, you've got, you know, censorship over lyrics and so on and so forth, or, you know, censorship of mass murdering fuckheads. But it's along the same lines in that you are going back and you are essentially trying to, you know, stick your head in the sand and say, oh, no, it never happened.
Which is a particularly dangerous mechanism, can be a particularly dangerous place you can get yourself into. You pretend something that didn't. I mean, history has a nasty habit of repeating itself, and boy, we'd have to look too far to find where that's happened recently. Cough, Donald Trump, And lots of things. I mean, without getting too far into this, but that whole sort of link between, you know, putting the Confederate and putting the Nazi flag next to the American flag, it's like, oh, come on, you know. Arnold Schwarzenegger actually, I think he perfectly described the Nazi Party and Nazis of the time. He described them as losers.
Yes.
Because they literally are losers who lost.
Yes.
And a failed ideology.
And only said only the way that Arnold could.
Yes, absolutely.
You know. Are losers, you know?
Yeah.
I know, it's such a touchy subject, and it's such a touchy subject because on the one hand, I agree with you. It's, I don't think there should ever be censorship of what's happened of the past. I mean, we're seeing now coming out of, and using examples from history, coming out of from the Second World War, a lot of the stuff that the Allies did to Germany toward the end of the war, you know, the firebombings of Dresden and Leipzig and, you know, the carpet bombings of Tokyo and things like that that occurred, they were horrific, absolutely horrific. And we're only starting to hear about them now because people are starting to actually listen to it. Because, you know, as we know, history is written by the victor. Mm-hmm. But in this case where you've got, and, you know, the lyrics that, in one particular article that was actually picked up by the ABC, our national broadcaster, in the song, Axl Rose uses some pretty colourful language to describe black people and homosexuals and immigrants. He says, they come to our country and think they'll do as they please, like start some mini Iran or spread some fucking disease. What's very interesting about that is that could probably be, you know, the next Trump song. You can even hear him saying it. They come to our country and do as they please. You know, it could be
the bad people that come here, and they're all, you know, the Mexicans, they're all rapists and whatever the other.
Exactly. You know, they're sending their rapists in my tiny hands, you know.
That is a surprisingly good Donald Trump impersonation.
Thank you.
I usually don't bother. That's a surprisingly good one.
But,
you've been listening to Alec Baldwin again.
No. But it is, I mean, you know, in 89 he had an interview, I think it was with Rolling Stone, and he said, I don't like being told what I can and can't say. So it's a bit hypocritical for him now to turn around and be like, oh, no, we'll just remove it from the album, because it was an original part of the album. And you look at the lengths that people have gone to over the years to get censorship or get around censorship. I mean, in obviously Soviet Russia, there was a lot of records and such that were printed on, you know, X-ray film and things like that, so that they could listen to the Beatles and things like that. So, is this around about the same sort of idea? You know, is Axel sort of almost succumbing to communism here?
Ooh, it's an interesting topic. I have a lot of problem. Well, communists is probably, now this is the other fun thing about politics that I have a particular problem with. When people reach for the word communist, what they, and then go off to describe a certain thing, I think the word they should be reaching for is fascist.
Yes.
The word you're reaching for is fascist, because that involves sort of dictating to various people what, you know, this is the way that we're doing things, and anything else that isn't that isn't going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, the communists did that as well.
Yes. So, I mean, this is a problem that I have. This is, again, we could disappear down the rat hole with this one, but the problem that I have with both ends of extremist politics is they're both very fascist. You know, you take you know, sort of the left-leaning types extended all the way to the farthest edges of things, and you end up with sort of what this is sort of saying here, where we go back and we completely whitewash anything that could possibly trigger anybody about anything, and then you've got the fascists on the other extreme, where you've got anybody who opposes you gets locked up in the locked up in internment camps. And they both sound suspiciously similar.
Yeah, and I think the problem with whitewashing this kind of stuff and removing it from history, there's a comedian by the name of Bill Burr. I don't know if you know who he is. He's hilarious. I find him very funny, and he does a bit on people that assault women and so on and so forth. And he says the first thing he says is, you know, you should never. He said you should never hit a woman. It's just not right, right? But if you ignore all the build up and you ignore the reasons as to why someone got to that place that you know they did what they did, they assaulted someone, then you cut out all the build up and you cut out all of the reasons as to why it happened, and so you can never fix the problem. You're just left with the act. And this for me is very similar to doing that. You know, when you start to whitewash history and you start to make people feel all special and precious and, you know, nothing can ever hurt them and there's safe spaces and all this sort of stuff, not only are you giving people a false idea of reality and a false idea of what life is like, but you're almost protecting them against things that they shouldn't need protection against.
Absolutely. And also as well, in doing that, you also get a surprising amount of pushback from people who just decide, well, I don't care what you say. I'm going to spout Nazi things and say horrible things about women, black people, homosexuals, transgender, da da da, all the things that people are trying to, you know, create these safe spaces around. You just end up with people around who just decide, well, fuck you, I'm just going to say whatever I like. And then then they end up in the White House.
And not just visiting. and then it becomes – if you look at Germany as a case study, because I think if we're talking about censorship and people doing all that sort of stuff, they are kind of the poster childs. What it is breeding now – is you have a lack of patriotism in Germany. So, you know, people have been taught for many years you're not allowed to be proud to be German. Now the younger people are starting to wake up to that, and they're going, well, hang on a minute, why not? I'm not. What do you mean I'm not allowed to be proud to be German? Oh, you know, because of the whole, you know, Hitler and the Hitler thing with the Hitler and the walking and the Hitler thing. And they're going, but hang on a minute, that's not me. I didn't do that. I remember I was walking across the King Charles Bridge one day, which is in Prague, for those geographically challenged of us that are listening, and with my now ex-girlfriend who was standing next to me. And we're walking across, and I got speaking to this guy who was from Melbourne. And the Melbourne guy said to him, you know, you get chatting to people as you do. He was about 65. And he said, you know, I said to him, where's your favourite place you've been to? And he said, France, how about you? And I said, Germany. I said, have you been to Germany? And he got really indignant. And he said, well, no, of course I haven't. I said, oh, a bit of a violent reaction, like, why not? And he said, because I'm Jewish and what they did and what they are is disgusting. So, you know, so what's happened is now a lot of the youth are saying, we're not allowed to be proud. And then suddenly you get these groups like Pegida rising up and saying, well, hang on a minute, why aren't we allowed to be proud? We should be proud to be German. But of course, that's all just a mask over the fact that, you know, they're neo-Nazis and they want to do the whole Hitler thing again. And it starts with stuff like this, in my opinion. You know, it starts with little bits of censorship here and there, and then before you know it, it's you know, you're not allowed to walk down the road singing Kumbaya unless you get some skinhead make you bite the gutter.
Yeah. I mean, and this is not, I mean, just as a point, this is not just happening in Germany as well. I mean, it's happening as well in lots of different places. And there seems to be this sort of, you know, Le Pen and, oh, what's the Dutch guy? Geert Van Wilders and UKIP and Britain First and all these sort of, and particularly home here in Australia, One Nation and all the other splinter.
I was going to say Pauline Hanson, yeah.
Yeah, and the splinter parties that have formed from the general dissolution and chaos that surrounds One Nation. Which, I mean, I'm not going to give them any idea. Maybe we can cut that. We'll cut this bit out, actually, Dave. I just want to make a point here, because I don't want to give them any ideas. If all these splinter parties actually got together, if they had, how have I described this before? I think I said, like if these splinter parties had one brain cell each instead of the one they collectively share, they would get behind Pauline Hanson and form like one super party and make a good fist of it.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that's true. There's no way that I'm cutting that out either, because that was way too good.
No.
But I agree with you, you know, and this is, but it all begins where you get someone who's thinking, and maybe Axel's thinking he's doing the right thing, right? Maybe he's turning around and saying, you know,
about this. He did a show with Elton John. Because everybody thought he did a show some years ago with Elton John some homophobic sort of fuckwit, and he did a show with Elton John to say, no, it's fine, you know, I don't really hate gay people.
That's like, it's like saying, I'm not racist, but, and the second they say the but, you know it's coming.
Yep.
You know, I mean, but this is not just happening in the music industry. We had the thing recently with Hank Azaria from The Simpsons.
Oh,
and now
God,
they're wanting to kill off the Apu character from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, this sort of stuff actually makes my blood boil, because you are changing a very successful formula based on new ideologies and new things that are coming through. And in some aspects I can understand that, and some aspects I can say, okay, you know, that I get that, that makes sense. But by the same token, I mean, for God's sake, it's a TV show. If you don't like it, turn it off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
The other thing, I mean, not about this specifically about The Simpsons, because I believe it was an Indian man who made the point originally, but it always seems that these people who want to talk about the censorship, about whitewashing and taking away all these words that refer to gay people and black people and whatever, all seem to be suspiciously white.
Yes.
There is a suspicious amount of white guilt involved.
Yeah, there is. And whether or not you believe that that is justified, or whether or not you believe it is not, it's kind of irrelevant. The point is that a lot of people stick their noses in where it doesn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm aware that we're two podcasters saying that. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. But this isn't the first time this has happened in the music industry either.
I'm sure this has probably happened in the rap with rappers as well, who are a little bit more freer with the N-word than most.
Yeah,
and this has probably happened where someone, well, you know, I know that there are several, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know it's a bit of a thing amongst that, that they will have, some have decided that they're just not going to use that word, even though they are black people. It was traditionally a word used to describe black people. They have decided themselves that no, we're not doing it. Because while we're using it for whatever purpose that we're using it for, other people don't see it the same way.
I know it happened with Dire Straits. With Money for Nothing.
Oh, Money for Nothing, yeah. The little faggot with his golden earring or whatever.
This little faggot got the earring and the makeup, yeah.
Yes.
And he changed it to Queenie's, I think. See, the little Queenie's got the earring and the makeup.
That may have been a radio edit thing, so they could put... Well, they usually with the radio edit, actually, they just cut that verse out completely.
Well, no. That was actually live. He started...
Oh, really?
Knopfler actually started doing that live.
Oh, okay. Well, because for the people unaware of the origins of that song, he's been quite open about it on the internet, and I'll see if I can find an interview where he's talking about it. The genesis for that song was him in somewhere in America, I think it was in Los Angeles or something, in a shop, and he was listening to these guys, these, you know, people who move stuff around in the shop, looking at MTV. And I think that, I don't know who they were referring to, but that apparently was one of the lot, and he was listening to these guys talking. And he found what they were saying was so unbelievably hilarious. He asked the shopkeeper for a bit of paper and a pen so he could write down what these guys were saying. And one of the lines that one of these guys had said was that. So it's not really him talking. It's him sort of quoting some other guy. We've gone off topic slightly here, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, a little bit, but we're still talking about censorship in a broader sense, I think, you know. You know, changing that, I mean, in this case, he was quoting people who that was the way people spoke in the 80s about MTV.
Yep.
You know, you're changing that, you're essentially rewriting history. And I have a serious problem with that. I've never liked that.
Yeah, you can see why it happens. People think that they're doing something good.
Yeah.
But I really wonder if they are and why they're doing it, more to the point.
It's just odd. People seem to change things for the sake of changing them sometimes, I think.
Yeah, or because they've decided that, you know, they're right and that they want to do it their way.
Exactly. So, but I think that's probably the most strangest part of the news that we can talk about. I think what might be worthwhile doing is now just having a chat about those albums that we didn't get to chat about last week.
The album that you gave me to listen to was Accord, and the album name was Ethereality.
Ethereality, that's yes. Right. Yes, yeah. So what did you think? I want your thoughts.
I quite enjoyed it. I guess because these records are ones that are particular favourites of yours, the ones that you suggested to listen, that I listened to, Tesseract and Accord. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing this is a guitar sound that you particularly enjoy.
Yeah, it is. It's that kind of slightly dead but very present guitar tone. Sits right under the vocals really nicely, and it's just very, very melodic. I find it a very melodic singing sort of tone.
Okay. I'm just going to call up the album here because I want to – the second last one on the album, Upon Reflection, which is
yes.
The instrumental one.
Yep.
I really enjoyed that one.
Monster of a track.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Is that one that particularly popular? Have you seen these guys live at all?
No, I haven't. They're from Scotland. And I would love to see them live. I don't even know if they're still together or what's going on. I presume
they are still together. I did have a bit because they've let me have a look. Oh, no, this is their most recent album that they've released.
It is, yeah, which I think was released 2016. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, I really enjoyed them when I first heard them. I heard them just on I think it was on a Spotify mix or something like that a little while ago. And I went, this is really cool. It's very, very different stuff. What are your top three on there?
I liked the opening track as well, Levels.
Levels is good.
It was a good one.
Not to be confused with the one by Avicii. the late, great Avicii, I should say, who's unfortunately... who's no longer with us, unfortunately.
Those are the two that probably stood out the most to me. What about you? Which ones really stick out for you?
For me, it is obviously the title track, Ethereality, and the track that comes before it.
Levity,
yeah. Which, for me, that Levity reminds me of Parable and Parabola by Tool. Like, it's got that really sweet little... piano-y sort of intro thing, and then it just kicks in. But it's not anything like Tool. Like, I think these guys are somewhere between, you know, Carnival and Porcupine Tree. That's what they feel like to me.
On their Bandcamp page, they explicitly mention that they are particularly influenced by Tool and by Carnival. Just as a side point, I think it's criminal how... especially, well, maybe it's more so these days, how underrepresented Carnival is in here in Australia. Those guys should be on the same level as, like, you know, I don't know, AC/DC or something like in this country.
Absolutely.
And
I agree with you.
Madness that they're not.
But, well, yeah, I agree with you, but you got to remember that AC/DC has spent years toting and basically playing for drunken wankers with Southern Cross tattoos on the back of their calves, driving utes. So
that's a good point. That is,
you know,
a good point.
I mean, for those of you who are listening from the United States, what you guys would call a redneck, we call a bogan. And the bogans for us, generally speaking, drive what we call a ute. You guys would call it a pickup, but it's not really a pickup. It's sort of like a if you took an estate car and cut it off behind the front doors and then put a big flatbed on the back. That's what we call a ute. Look them up. You can find them. We exported them to your country. I think they sold well. I don't know.
Yeah, they sold pretty well.
And they generally drive those, and they have Southern Cross tattoos on them. You know, sort of like you guys have the Confederate flag. We've got the Southern Cross and the Eureka Stockade flag. And they drink a lot of beer.
Sure, Australians drink a lot of beer anyway, but these guys drink a lot of beer.
Well, they drink VB, so... You know, I should retract that statement. They drink VB and lots of VB, which is not beer. It's shit. That's why I think they've never really taken off here. It's why they're much bigger in Europe and things. Why a lot of music is bigger in Europe, particularly prog stuff, because it's, people understand it a bit better, I think.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, that was the topic I had we might get to that sometime about bands who make it, particularly, and Tame Impala is the new, probably the new latest one, is that they were virtually unknown here. Suddenly they go to America, have a hit, and, you know, aren't they the greatest thing in the world? It's like, Rush complained about this mercilessly in their earlier career that, you know, they went to America, became big in America, and then Canada was suddenly like, aren't they the greatest Canadian band ever? And the band were like, well, really? We couldn't even get a gig playing a high school when we were in Canada, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, I mean, you're right. It wasn't until they got over to the US and they had a bit of a hit. Suddenly, everyone's going, oh, my God, I love these guys. Mm. And it's like, but who cares? Like, you... Why are we not supporting our own? And this is another topic. I mean, you know, we can go on for hours about people not supporting their local areas, local area music.
I'd like to think that people who listen to this show and who listen to this show probably do support their local music, and we will probably be inundated with suggestions for local bands in their area to listen to.
I hope people are doing that, by the way. I hope you send us emails and say, hey, listen to these guys, or hey, listen to these. Even if you're in a band and you want us to listen to your stuff, send it through. More than happy to. I'm actually working on getting a Western Sydney band to come and join us in the next couple of episodes.
Oh, nice.
To come and have a chat to us about prog music and prog life and all that sort of stuff and touring. They just got off a reasonably big tour with a reasonably big US prog band. So stay tuned for those in the coming weeks.
Oh, nice.
As well. Future episode. Woo!
All right.
Yeah.
So I suppose now that we've sort of discussed a chord for a little bit, let's flip the channel and talk about the record that I gave to you, which...
Yeah, Cross and Jackson, Another Day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that?
I'm a big fan of King Crimson, and this had King Crimson written all over it.
Not surprising, given that David Cross was a member of King Crimson some time ago.
Exactly. The track that was absolutely standout for me, I think from memory, was Last Ride.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to mention as well, actually, Last Ride. Mm. And the other one I was going to pick out that was Anthem for Another Day.
Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
Those two were particularly good.
I think Last Ride for me was the one that really drew my attention, though. Mm. But it was really cool. And goes back to something that we spoke about before we started doing this podcast, is the way that you and I listen to music is both very, very, very different. In that I will often listen to the lyrics and get the meaning behind the lyrics and so on and so forth, and a lot of the guitar work and things before the overall concept and the overall songs itself. So listening to an album where there were no lyrics.
Yeah, this album is entirely instrumental. I was wondering how you'd go with that.
Yeah, it was
an entirely instrumental album.
It wasn't hard. Like, it wasn't like I was sitting there going, oh my God, when will this end? because it was really cool. It was really interesting stuff. Mm. I found it almost jarring. Not in a bad way, but it was really cool to listen to. Would I necessarily put it on just for because I feel like listening to it? Probably not. It's not one of those ones where I'd just give it a spin for listening to sake. But it is definitely something that I'd recommend for people to listen to because a lot of the stuff in there was surprisingly complex.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And David Cross and David Jackson are the two main players, David Cross on violin and David Jackson on saxophone. Mick Paul is on bass. Craig Blundell is the one I was trying to think of. Craig Blundell is the drummer on this particular record. He's currently playing with Stephen Wilson at the moment.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Craig is a really, really good drummer. I mean, he was handed the rather onerous job of replicating Marco Miniman's drum parts for Stephen Wilson, and he is doing a fantastic job at the moment.
Yeah, wow.
So that would be my suggestion. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to where people can buy this record if you want to purchase it. If you listen to it on Spotify, I'll put a link in the show notes to where you can buy this record, which I think people should. If you are at all a fan of King Crimson or David Jackson's main band, or at least the band that he seems to be the most famous for, is Vandergraaf Generator, which is another progressive rock band from the golden age of progressive rock. If you're looking for new progressive music to listen to, I'd give Vandergraaf Generator a listen. They've got some particularly good records that are probably a little bit less known than the sort of big names of progressive rock. Yeah, but this album is definitely not one that you can just sort of have on in the car while you're driving somewhere. This is definitely a sit down with your headphones on album.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Probably more my sort of speed when I'm listening to music. There are albums that I do listen to sort of, you know, just while I'm sort of going around the place, but this one is definitely one for sitting down and listening to in its entirety with headphones on, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there are some really good albums out there that I think you need to sit down and just listen to top to tail, and don't cut them up, whatever you do. This is definitely one of those. Where you just want to listen to it top to tail and just strap in for the ride. The sax work, the musicianship, I'm still processing it, to be really honest with you. It's still, because it's so far removed from what I normally listen to, despite being a prog head, that sort of stuff, you know, that to me was more bizarre than Jethro Tull. And Jethro Tull is bizarre.
Oh, yeah.
So, not in a bad way or anything. I didn't hate it. It just was not something that I was expecting you to throw my way.
If you remember in the original podcast and the podcast where I originally recommended this to you, I deliberately didn't say very much about this because I didn't want to sort of tip you off as what you were going to be getting.
Yeah. I do remember that now. I probably should have done the same with last week's one that I recommended you, the one for Above and Beyond. Which we...
I blame me for that one because while you were telling me about it, I was on Google looking it up. going back to what we were saying about spoilers last week.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But look, I reckon we might leave this one as a bit of a short one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And leave this one here for this evening. But what I do want to do is I want to say to the people who are listening, if you've got anything you want to send us, any music recommendations or anything maybe you want us to talk about on the show, send us an email, send us a tweet, send us a Facebook. We're always reachable through the Dream Theatre Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand. And we've got our emails as well, which are Hoggy. What's our email?
So the email address that you can send us emails at the Dream Theatre Fan Club is contact.dtfcanz@gmail.com.
I think that just about wraps it up for this week. A bit of a heavier week this week, talking about censorship in music and strange things. What are we going to be talking about next week, Hoggy?
Next week, I think we should probably talk about social media and the musicians.
Yeah, good idea.
We've sort of skirted around it a couple of times, various forums and things that we've talked about, but it seems to me that the only way to reach fans these days is social media. You're certainly not going to get any help from mainstream media. So you kind of have to do it yourself through social media. And we can talk about that, and certainly our sort of lower level experiences with that in the various projects that we've run over the years.
Absolutely.
And my experiences looking at bands and how they do it.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be a good one for next week. So obviously come back next week. We would love to see you guys here or listen to you guys here, or however that works when you're listening to podcasts. We'd love to have you guys along for the ride as we chat all things prog and all things music next week on the 9-8 podcast. My name's Dave.
And my name is Alex, and we'll see you all next week.